dancing in the apocalypse!
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle!
I know what some of your big city no-bra-wearing hairy-legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It's episode 243, and I'm glad you're here with me. It's your host, if you're Whitey Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. But first, I got some things I want to say. Listeners, look, tis the season. And no, Alonzo, don't get too excited. It's not Christmas, but the other sacred holiday around these airwaves and in this booth, it's the Max Fun Drive.
It's the most wonderful drive of the year.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get a little deeper into why Max Fun Drive is so important, how you can support us, and what you get as a member besides the satisfaction of knowing you're keeping your favorite shows going. But right up top, we want to bring attention to a couple of things. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, tomorrow is our Dirty Dancing Watch Along, Saturday, April 30th at 4 p.m. Pacific. And you can join us by going to twitch.tv/ifds.
Then may I just say a small thing on that?
Of course.
When we say watch along, it means watch along as Alonzo and Iffy and I watch it, and just come prepared that I will quote an annoying amount of this movie. And I don't just mean like I carried a watermelon nonsense. I mean like full getting into, I study at the Cornell School of Hotel Management. So that is the level, like the full Neil Kellerman deep dive that you can expect.
If that sounds like the time of your life, don't miss it.
Ooh. Oh, man. Well, and then on Friday, you know, May 6th, that's going to be the last day of the drive. Dre and Alonzo are hosting the network's countdown celebration featuring Jackbox Games. That will be May 6th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. All right? All right?
All right.
All right.
I'm giving everyone a chance to write it in their little, you know, pocketbooks, pencils down. You have to rewind if you missed it, because we're going to continue with the show. So, first up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, I'll tell you, Iffy, you know, I've been a fan of pistachios my whole life. Like, when I was a little kid, they used to dye the shells red for some weird reason. You get it on your fingertips, and it was a thing. They stopped doing that, thank goodness. But somehow, over the decades of my life, it never occurred to me that, like, every other nut on the market of the, you know, of the delicious kind, you could just get pistachios out of the shell. And it's changed my life. Dave started getting bags of roasted pistachios unshelled from places on the internet. Now I dump a handful in my steel-cut oatmeal, and it just gives me like a little taste of Mediterranean to start the day. It's delicious, and I don't have to sit there and get like red fingers. It's a win-win all around.
That was a wild ride. Yeah. I mean, you started with the very earnest, let me tell you, Iffy, or something like that. I was like, this could go so many ways. I didn't see any level of discovery, and you hit numerous ones.
Look, it's Max Fun Drive. I'm bringing the A game.
Oh, yeah.
Truly.
And I actually did. I quickly searched it, why they used to dye the pistachios red. And according to, you know, nuts.com, due to antiquated harvesting methods, nutshells were often left with ugly stains and splotches. Foreign pistachio producers dyed the pistachios with a bright red color in an effort to hide the stains and make the nut more appealing to customers.
That's what I do to my face.
Yeah. So
dye it an appealing color to distract.
Pistachios were the first Kardashian. You learned it here first on the pod. Okay.
Pistachio Kardashian is a great drag name. Someone needs to snap that up.
Look, you got that for free, y'all. Go ahead and take it. Next up, we have the queen of the Midwest herself, Treya Clark. What's good?
What is good with me is, you know, every once in a while, I like to dig into YouTube.com, and I have been getting super into, Vogue has this series called Life in Looks, and I'm a fan of all kinds of art, and I love people who are fans of that art. I don't know fashion super well, I'm not like all up on my couture designers or all that, but listening to famous people, just typically actresses, like go through you know, different variations of things they wore on red carpets over however many years is a fun insight. Also, some of them are super embarrassing, like the oh cool, I'm super excited, I wore that to the 2003 MTV Movie Awards or whatever. So it's a good blend of those things. It's a nice little kind of on the PR cruise that many actors have to take. You do all sorts of things, but the life and looks I really like. And I just watched one, the newest one with Sarah Jessica Parker, who knows so much about designers and about the just the building process. And she did one just on Met Gala looks that she did.
Whoa.
And I found it so interesting. And in a mere like 12 minutes, which is about as much interesting as I can handle.
Oh, well, you know, speaking of interesting, we have a very wonderful and interesting guest.
Oh, yeah.
They're a writer, NPR culture critic, author of The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. It's Glenn Weldon. What's good?
Hey, guys. Well, what's good is me being here. I am, as they say, a first time, long time. I have been listening to this show in all its incarnations, all its final boss, final forms over the years. I am delighted to be here. I'm a Max Funster in long standing, and yeah, that's why that's what's good with me, man. I love being here.
And look, we're doing Fun Drive right now, so we figured if we had somebody who was actually on NPR, they could really give us those extra tips of like how to get you to like pick up that phone and, you know, get the tote bag. So
I know nothing about that, but I will say, actually, here's the thing that's good. Actually, I just this week had a title change. I went from being a NPR reporter to an NPR correspondent, which is a completely internal distinction that doesn't particularly map with what the hell I do over there, because I'm just a critic and there's no official NPR critic title. But it sounds good. And if my mom was around, she would be bragging about it without understanding what the hell it means, because that was her thing. She used to say, he's on the radio that I can only listen to through my Facebook computer, because she called her computer her Facebook computer.
Oh, that's adorable.
Congratulations. But that is a smell you moment.
It totally is. But I will say, real quick, in terms of my work as a critic, I have just seen the first 5 episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which debuts on Paramount Plus very soon, and it is a prequel to the original series. It takes place like 10 years before Kirk takes over the Enterprise. So you got Captain Pike, played by Anson Mount, who is a good-looking man. It's got Hot Spock. It's got Cadet Uhura, right? So she's just, this is for her first mission on the Enterprise. You got a really badass, probably queer Nurse Chapel. It's the Enterprise exploring space and shitting all over the Prime Directive at every planet they land on, which is what you want.
Your Bible is a lie.
it's a little funny. It's a little silly like that. It looks good. And Anson Mount, I mean, he's very funny. He's great Pike. And also his name is Anson Mount. So, you know, anytime.
Yeah. Most people, of course, know him from the Britney Spears motion picture Crossroads.
In fact,
but that name is his own porn parody. So.
Anytime a man's name is a command you'd like to give him, Alonzo, you know, I'm for it.
It's a mnemonic for sure. Speaking of porn parodies, Iffy, what's good?
Oh, that's my favorite segment. Nice. It's, you know, only rivaled by last week's daddy one. What's good with me is, if you follow me on the socials, you know that the game I write on, Apex Legends, we finally announced the character that I've been working on for a year. It's been funny to be working on this game, and people are like, what is he doing? And you can't talk about it for a year. He's a dad character. He's tied in with another character from the game. By now, the lore trailer is out. You can see I wrote that, and that was fun. So I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying people and nerds really enjoy and also not enjoy, because nerds just, you know, you get both sides with nerds. The thing that I made.
Iffy, can I say, Alonzo and I are just so proud of you. You're doing such a good job, guy. I'm just, just
on that thing that you're working on the Facebook computer.
It's so good. If I can watch it on my Facebook computer, there I you will. Go.
Yes. Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's. I think there's only one way to celebrate a nerdy thing like that, and that is talking about a nerdy movie. So it's finally time. We're going down into the newest, darkest Batcave to discuss the Batman. But first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Our movie news segment where we go over the week's movie news and discuss amongst ourselves while trying to decide if it's important and if we care. And first up, we have another breaking news from The Fast Family. Yes. Justin Lin has stepped down as director of Fast X. Lin, who co-wrote the script, will stay on as a producer. This news comes just a couple of weeks after the movie started production. In a statement, Lin said that he made the difficult decision with the support of Universal. Is this important? Do you care?
A director leaving the helm of a film with this kind of budget and this kind of just momentum, let alone societal standing, already into production, I can't. We're going to hear so, or we aren't. But the details on what led to that and like, oh, that they had a creative impasse. Again, you have those at the development stage, right? That's like, oh, I want to hire Anson Mount to replace Vin Diesel. Like, those are the things early on. The idea of stuff going down while they're in production tells me that then it becomes very much an ego thing. And like, huh, I wonder what egos could be on that Fast and Furious set. Say.
The Vice magazine oral history writes itself.
This fall from the director Vin Diesel comes. Right? That's what's going on here. That's got to be the only thing that's going on here, right?
And Justin Lin, like we were just talking about, he's directed half of this franchise. He has five other of these films under his belt.
He made the franchise relevant.
Truly. And I would not be surprised if things do come out about it being just like, oh, backseat driving. Did I do a pun, Ryan?
I mean, it's either that or he got a Marvel or Star Wars, which even then I don't think someone would leave a movie do that. That's the only news that could come out that would not make me worried.
But we're in the final chapter of this franchise that you've done, you know, the lion's share of, and you're leaving. Okay. Ooh. That's totally normal, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. And honestly, well, this is real inside baseball, but him directing, like, there's also all sorts of DGA protections built in on that. Of how Justin exactly, like, what rights he had and how those could have been stepped on. And so someone else moving in as director who might already be involved with the process could have a whole union kerfuffle behind it.
Maybe they'll bring in the guy who made Bloodhead, whatever that other Diesel movie was that came out, right?
No, it was Bloodhead. It was Bloodhead.
Bloodhead.
It was totally Bloodhead.
I was like, if it wasn't before, it is now.
They're leaving money on the table, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Sadly, has never played a movie called Bloodhead is the queen actress Viola Davis. Mm-hmm. Who she is currently playing is Michelle Obama in a new TV series called The First Lady. And in a BBC interview, Davis reacted to negative viewer comments made about minute details of her performance by saying, among other things, that, quote, critics absolutely serve no purpose. That line is the one that publications and, of course, Twitter latched onto, though in the original interview, Davis seems to be referring to critics as in nasty commenters rather than capital C criticism. Is this important? Do you care?
My brother, who is a doctor, once asked me, or once told, described what I did for a living as being a blogger. And I was like, no, that is not how this works. I write for an online publication, yes, but I'm not a blogger. I am a film critic whose work just happens to appear on the Facebook computer. And so I think that Viola Davis misspoke a bit and lumped actual critics, people who do it for a living and who have been, you know, very supportive of Ms. Davis and her endeavors over the years, with the small C online trolls who basically like decided to go complain about how she holds her mouth or something.
I get it. I mean, like, if you are an actor or actress or any, it pays you not to care. It pays you to dismiss criticism, big C, small C. I get where she's coming from. I totally get it. I do like the show. It's basically The Crown US, right? It's basically like great acting, really on the nose writing. The first time we see Betty Ford in that show, it's through her liquor bottles. I'm like,
no, it's not. No, it's not.
It totally is. It's totally is. And she's she's drunk dancing on her porch. And I'm like, this is the level of the show. This is exactly where I wanted the level of the show to be. I'm in. But and she's great in it. But yeah, I totally get where she's coming from.
I definitely, because in the BBC interview, she says something about how you need to have a thick skin as an artist, as an actor, because of course part of it is people dissecting your performances. But yeah, I get the idea too of being hounded on social media by a bunch of mouth breathers who have no idea what they're talking about. Talking to this woman who's like been working on her craft and who's trying this very specific thing. Like, go away. I don't want to listen to any of you. It's one thing to have someone like, Alonzo, or our esteemed guest. Like, because critics, actual film critics, what they're doing, like, is so much deeper, right? You're providing context, you're giving comparison, you're doing all these things. But just a bunch of shitty people. I mean, like, well, this is, I'm kind of singing Iffy's refrain now, like, internet trolling, trollers be trolling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
All the time, he says that.
Hit that block button, you know.
But you know, we're not writing for the actors. We're not writing for the producers. Exactly. We're not writing for the directors. We're writing for the audience. We are writing to kind of let people know what this is, how to fit it into context. We are trying to put it in. The context is exactly the word. We're trying to say, okay, if you've seen this before, you've seen this many times before. In the case of the First Lady, you've seen it many times before. But no actor has ever read criticism, and they all read criticism, by the way, but like no actor has ever read criticism and said, oh, I need to course correct. That's not what it's for. That's not what anybody wants. That's not what any of this is about.
Good point. I'll get right on that.
Exactly. Oh, I won't hold my mouth in this way anymore. No. Even theater actors who could course correct, theoretically, they're not going to do it. They are locked in. And they are responding to the audience and to their fellow actors. They're not responding to criticism, and they should not.
Bingo.
Hear, hear.
A nice thing that I'm thrilled that we get to talk about, because everything's so negative, you know. Everyone's being mean to Viola Davis, and y'all just have to stop it right now. But no, this is a cool thing. So Martin Scorsese has his nonprofit, the Film Foundation, and they've been doing a lot of work, both sort of visibly and invisibly, about restoring classic films, a lot of international films, like, you know, films from decades past that American audiences might otherwise not have seen. They have just announced plans to hold a virtual screening room that's going to be happening every month, kicking off this coming May 9th, and it'll be the second Monday of each month after that. Restored movies will be available to watch for free for 24 hours, and the first one is one of my very favorite films of all time, the 1945 Michael Powell Emmerich Pressburger comedy I Know Where I'm Going. Is this important? Do you care?
I love this. I mean, we're obviously fans of curation here, and you guys have to be, because both Alonso and I work in that space, and so if he has no choice but to get on board. But the idea of not just the restoration that's going into these and the curation, but they're surrounding them with like those kind of contextual introductions and then having conversations afterwards. And I think if they're only bringing on the second Monday of the month, these are carefully selected and the people involved with them are carefully selected. And what a cool way to expose yourself to new films and all of the sort of conversations around them. And like Alonzo said, for free. This is what art and cinema is all about, you guys.
And you know Scorsese's already got like the next 2 years worth programmed. Like a month? But I have all these films I want to do, you know.
No, this is a good thing. And the online access and the free access is an important thing because, I mean, we are increasingly atomized and dispersed. And I felt differently about this maybe because I used to be a city mouse. And now, after the pandemic, we moved out to a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And I am now a country mouse. And the thing I miss most, besides Vietnamese food, is the AFI Theater here in Silver Spring, Maryland, where you can go and see restored films every so often, this kind of thing. And the issue of restoration is only going to get bigger because more and more of that nitrate stock is crumbling into dust and very explosive dust every day. So this is a good thing.
If you guys understood how many texts Iffy and I have sent each other about nitrate film,
it would blow
your mind.
You need to get that nitrate going.
Nonstop around the clock.
I saw a nitrate print of the Powell Pressburger Black Narcissus, and it was one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen projected. But you have to have a theater that has a booth that can even show nitrate, because one false spark and it's cinema parody.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
God damn. You know, we got to end on an explosive note. We're going to take a break. But when we come back, it's the Batman. Hey, hey, how's it going? It's your Max Film crew, and we're here to talk to you about Max Fun Drive, because it's going on right now. It's cool. Usually, most podcasts are kind of just supported through ads, and with that, you don't have as much control over which ads you play because you need them to pay the bills. Well, here we're supported by you and the listeners who give their hard-earned dollars to a couple of dorks who love movies too much.
Couple of dorks right here. So the overall network goal, and the network is going for 20,000 new and upgrading members overall. And here at Max Film, our first goal level is 450 new and upgrading Maximum Film listeners.
That's right. And if we reach that goal, we will have a drawing among the new and upgrading members who have listed Maximum Film as one of their donor shows. And the winner of that drawing gets to pick a movie for us to review. You may recall last year we discussed a truly indescribable anime called Mind Game. That was a suggestion that came from a Max Film listener and Max Fun Drive donor who won the drawing. This year, it could be you.
Get us there. Max yes. Fun Drive.
Woo. Yeah. So go ahead, MaximumFun.org/join. Join up or upgrade your membership or don't. We're not the boss of you, but we do appreciate you. Let's get back to the show. Back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Glenn Weldon,
Alonzo Duralde,
West, Keaton, Kilmer, Clooney, Bale, Affleck. Earlier this year, a new Batman joined the Pantheon. You know, I'm talking about that boy Pattinson, the latest Batman and director Matt Reeves' latest take on one of the most popular comic book heroes ever. So, Alonzo, why don't you do us the honors and sum up the plot of the Batman?
Whew. Well, first of all, to that pantheon, I want to add Conroy, the voice of the animated Batman, who it turns out is a gay, and I did not know until week. I'm like, yeah, Kevin Conroy.
Yeah. I saw that, too, talk about what Alonzo's referencing. DC is doing a pride run of comics. A friend of the pod, Danny Fernandez, is going to be writing a Poison Ivy Harley joint.
Nice.
And Kevin Conroy is going to be writing. And that's where most fans learn that he's gay. And it was really cool going in the comments and seeing people like celebrating it. And I'm like, shout out also to the social media manager for getting rid of any chuds and dumbasses so that I could just bask in the happiness.
Feel
the
love.
And hear.
Although if I might directly say something to my mother listening right now, Alonzo saying that doesn't mean that you can say
it. Yes, let's be very clear about that.
Just to clear that up. Yeah.
Okay. The Batman. Wow. Okay, so there is a very oil-covered a billionaire named Bruce Wayne who is real sad all the time and very gothy, and he dresses up as a bat and is a vigilante and scares the crap out of Gotham's criminal element, of which there is a sizable amount, mainly just by lurking in the shadows and occasionally beating the crap out of them. He unwittingly inspires the ultimate internet troll who goes by the name of the Riddler, who starts bumping off key figures in Gotham City, and Batman has to figure out how to bring him down before he commits mass murder in a way that you wouldn't believe a Batman movie would even flirt with showing after what's happened in real life. Also, there's a Catwoman and she's awesome. Also, there's a Penguin who is Colin Farrell for some reason. It makes no sense whatsoever, but what the hey, we'll go with it. And it's real long, but it's pretty cool, and it looks like it wants to pretend to be Zodiac, but it, beyond some cinematography choices, let's not kid ourselves. But yeah, it, we don't have to watch the Waynes die, so that's a plus, right? The Batman!
Nice. And shout out to Colin Farrell, whose recent thing has just been embracing, you know what? I bet you could make me look super unfuckable.
The fake stomach in the lobster was just the beginning.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You thought that guy turned you off. Just you wait.
Yeah. I'm gonna just keep it going. I'm gonna see how far I can go.
I'm gonna look like Richard Kind. whereas I would fuck Richard Kind. That's the ironic thing.
Joke's on you, Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
You don't know who I'd fuck. Yeah.
Now, Wanza, you said goth Batman. That's the Tim Burton Batman. This is emo Batman. Let's not get it twisted. This is shoegaze Batman.
This is a very My Chemical Romance.
This is a very, it's a very My Chemical Romance haircut.
You're right. A little potato for me, but I get the point. I mean, look, I don't think that Michael Keaton counts as a goth Batman because there's no guyliner on him, and he's still doing millionaire playboy, whereas this is like kind of billionaire miscreant. But
I don't mean to correct you, but there is guyliner on Michael Keaton. It just magically disappears as soon as he takes
the cowl comes off. Exactly. Right. Yep. Whereas Pattinson can't have it on enough.
Yeah.
I loved that. It did balance out his terrible haircut. I'll say, right. So I am probably the least versed. I've watched all of these films, but I'm not like so immersed in the mythology of the Bat world and everything around it. And I don't know if that makes me more or less patient than other people when it comes to these, but like Alonzo alluded to, like, oh, we didn't have to see his parents killed again. Uh-huh. I had actually been very much looking forward to the Ben Affleck version of this because I was excited for the Logan take on Batman. Like, oh, I feel like I've seen a kind of early 30s Bruce Wayne Batman so many times in my life. So seeing a Batman at a different stage, but it actually panned out for me unexpectedly because I was like, oh, you are doing a different origin here. That there's like this, you guys, you know, I love a man who has to do an emotional deep dive with himself. And when I finally cottoned on, like, oh, this whole thing is about Bruce Wayne having to come to emotional reckoning. Hello, Sergeant.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, clear distinction, just in case any listeners are confused. My Chemical Romance is emo, not goth. That's uh-huh. It's a lifestyle, not a costume. But I just wanted the millennial in me had to point that out. But you're so right, Dre. I think what this movie did that was so fun was that it's his first year after his first year being Batman. So it's the very early stages, and I feel like we typically skip that. You get like parents dead, origin story, figuring it out, and then boom, he's at it. He's the Bats. He's doing it. So it was an interesting take on that. And there's a lot of valid criticisms that I have heard people have for this. Like some people like the campier Batman, and this is definitely every like recent director who has taken on Batman has been like, I'm going back to the detective roots. And which was like cool. This is like one of my favorite takes on it, but I think people want the like newer version of the Adam West, which I'm sure there's going to be a Taika Waititi or something who will
come back.
Yeah. But
watch, the Daniels will get their hands on Batman. Oh, yeah. No one hit you.
Look, Glenn knows Batman like I know Christmas, so I'm dying to hear his take on this iteration.
Well, this is the thing. It's an iteration, right? This character is an ink blot that you can project project onto, and different people, different directors certainly, have always projected onto him. This is him at, as I think, his most vulnerable. This is the most soulful Batman. And that's not going to be to everyone's taste. A lot of people love the swear to me, you know, gray, gunmetal gray, mask for mask, grimdark Batman. But like, this is what I liked about this film is that this, all Batman films are stylized, but this one is not so stylized that it feels like the director is imposing himself between you and the character. The, Tim Burton's Batman is Tim Burton, and then it's Batman. Joel Schumacher's Batman for, which I love, is Joel Schumacher with a little bit of Batman. And Chris Nolan, for all his, like, this is realism and I just want it to be as real. No, this is totally like, this is Chris Nolan.
Batman. So,
and Snyder took that to 11. What we're getting here is what I would consider the most, quote unquote, realistic. People always say they want realistic, but this has scenes where Gordon lets this man in a cape past the police tape into a crime scene, and we get the cop standing around him going, what the fuck is going on here? What are you doing?
That is my favorite thing about this movie.
It's my favorite thing. Rules of evidence, dude. What are you doing? Yeah. That is realism. That,
who,
if you want realism,
pro wrestler in?
Yes. Who let this guy in Kevlar, who we should be really worried about, into this thing? This is going to get nerdy, but like, my favorite Batman comics are Batman Year One and The Long Halloween, and specifically Gotham Central, which is about, it really focuses on the cops as opposed to the Batman. The Batman makes appearances, but it's really about, you know, him doing everything and then leaving them to kind of pick up the pieces. And that's a very funny and a very smart approach. And that's kind of what we're getting here. I also love that this Batman has a definite emotional arc, which is not something that Batmans get to have. He starts out a creature of vengeance and hate, and he hides in the shadows, and then he goes to be, in the final scenes, a hero who goes public, who switches to being a beacon of hope. There's a scene with him literally, again, on the nose, but literally leading people out of the darkness. That's heroism. That's selflessness. That is what ultimately this character can be if you can figure out the way in, and I think this guy figured out the way in.
It is a rare, I think, superhero movie where the guy realizes most of the way through, oh shit, I'm doing this all wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm inspiring the worst elements, and I have to course correct now, because I don't want, no, not that guy. No, I don't want you to, no, I'm going to be this guy now.
Yeah, take back.
Yes, exactly. Takesies, backsies. And so I think that is an interesting thing to see somebody allow themselves to learn something, which is not necessarily this genre's bread and butter.
Well, there's something with that growth too that also belies such a lack of cynicism to a certain extent. Uh-huh. Like the framing of this, the first person we see killed, spoiler, sorry, it's available online now, you can see it like I did, but we see the incumbent mayor, and he's been running for re-election, and he's running against a young Black woman who is speaking fervently about how corrupt the system is. And she's essentially saying everything that our villains are ultimately going to say about how deep-rooted the rot is. But her trajectory and her angle on it is through hard work and connecting with the people and all these things that, as people who live in this real garbage person world, it's like, it's very easy to lose sight of those. So to watch that through line and then also see your Bruce Batman have to decide, well, either I'm also going to remain cynical, like nothing's going to change, and I'm just doing this as a kind of reactive vengeance, or you can do the proactive work that is trying to, you know, implement actual change. And I was surprised. It's there. Most films are drenched in cynicism at this point.
Yeah.
But certainly a Batman that has like three lights in the whole movie. Like, it's beautifully shot. That's not a criticism. It's real dark.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you on one of the major things that I liked about it. It almost, in a way, it wasn't trying to, but it almost, in a way, kind of like makes fun of
the Snyders and the Nolan Batman, because I think we for a while now with Batman, we were getting into this like vengeance and unhinged, you know, beating of people to get the answers. And it starts out that way, but it shows it in a way that's like, no, this guy isn't really doing anything. Like it seems very cool at first when the bat signal goes and everyone starts freaking out and you think it's a cool moment. And then it slowly reveals that it's like, no, this is madness. This is not how it's supposed to be. You're seeing Bruce learn. And that's why I think it's funny. People are mad that you don't see enough Bruce Wayne, and they didn't get to this in the movie, but I felt it was going to go to teaching Batman that he can do work as Bruce, because like historically Bruce Wayne does a lot of philanthropy, and and people seem to have forgotten that, because people are like, oh, this rich dude and he doesn't do anything. I was like, well, that's because that's the version of the Batman we've been getting. But historically, when he's Bruce, he's doing everything he can to fund, you know, relief efforts in Gotham, and then at night beating the shit out of mentally ill superpowered villains. you know, so like it was really cool to kind of see the breadcrumbs of that, of being like, oh, this is someone figuring out that like violence doesn't necessarily have to be the only answer, and that, yeah, him and the Riddler are the same. What difference is he from a villain if he's not really trying to make the change that matters?
Well, he's using a lot less ciphers.
Yeah.
I mean, as a nerd, as a Batman nerd, the fact that this is a kind of Jokerification of the Riddler, or a Zodiacification, or a Baneification.
I'd say a Baneification, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And like, for me, I don't like my potatoes to touch my steak, to touch my peas. And so every Batman villain has a lane, you know, and if it's Joker, it's a psychological thriller. If it's Catwoman, it's noir. If it's Penguin, it's a gangster movie. If it's Riddler, it's a mystery. And so, yes, there's a mystery here. These riddles are terrible. The worst thing about the movie, but I like when there's a clear, defined lane. I like that the Riddler is a intellectual threat, not a physical threat. And you know, that was a thing that bugged me, but I think it only bugs people like me.
Look, if I really wanted to annoy a segment of the movie going audience, I would suggest that this movie is following in the footsteps of Ghostbusters 2016
by
turning its villain into a homicidal internet troll.
Where
basically like 4chan is that, you know, Injustice League dome that comes out of the swamp on Super Friends, you know. And so I kind of admired that, because for Batman, that's kind of shitting where you eat. I mean, because that's where a lot of the, you know, fan base of this movie would also identify, as like someone who's a dick on Twitter and tries to annoy people. So I think at some point there's a thesis waiting to be written about how the dark side of fandom has emerged in films that are aimed at that fandom.
The ultimate Batman villain, Edgelord. Fear me, I am Edgelord.
Catwoman, of course, is another character that I have seen in different sort of TV and film
iterations.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I really dug Zoe, and I also, Zoe Kravitz, and I also didn't know where it was going, which was nice, because I do think, you know, the framework here is a detective story. It has a lot of film noir to it, but she was not a, you know, damsel in distress, nor she was like the femme fatale. So they didn't try and like, oh, let's just curb this Selina Kyle into this fitting thing so we can go real film noir. And I was grateful for that. But I really did like, I don't know if there's, if it's a background that you've heard before of her mother or who her father was or who that, but like I did like that reveal, and I like the shape of it, and I thought she was terrific. Like, she had a lot of stuff on her plate that she handled well.
Iffy, did it bug you that Robert Pattinson isn't jacked? He's like, on the scale of Adam West to Christian Bale, he is closer to Adam West. Does that factor for you?
No, it honestly
has a meathead.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, as someone who like went on his Dragon Ball Z podcast and complained that Goku isn't as buff in Dragon Ball Super as he is in Dragon Ball Z, you would think, but honestly, it worked for me because you couldn't tell, you know, at least for me, like it didn't like play that he was this like weaker, smaller guy, and you know, that's the beauty of these super suits, right?
The suit's doing a lot of work in these, always.
That really didn't bug me, but I think that is like valid in the Riddler of it all, is this like turning him into this. But I think in the same sense, I got the same delight Alonzo got out of it, where I'm like, yeah, it's like turning the mirror on the fans. And it almost in the same sense where they, like, I feel like this whole movie kind of like shines a light on this Snyder and Nolan Batman. It shines the light on the fans of like making this, you know, let's say like the first half of the movie version of the Batman, and everyone thinking it's cool. Like, if you thought it was cool by the end of the movie, you kind of feel dumb because the Riddler's like, yeah, you're like me.
We get each other.
Yeah. But you are right. Even though they said they're probably not going to bring out Joker, it's going to be interesting. It's kind of like the thing I felt with Venom, right? Where by the end of the first Venom movie, he was doing a whole bunch of Carnage stuff. So when Carnage came, when they announced Carnage, it was like, I don't know how you're going to, you already did Carnage. Yeah. You know, that's the main thing, is he uses his body like weapons and you gave it to Venom for some reason. So that's how I feel with the Joker, where it's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Because these are very, if you take out the riddles, these are Joker beats, you know? So
they did just announce that Batman 2, like today they announced Batman 2 has been greenlit with Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson. They didn't say anything about the villains who will be in it.
And on paper, I mean, in the actual comics, like one of the deepest benches of Rogues Gallery is like rivaled only by Spider-Man. And yet when it comes time to make the movies, it's always Joker, the Joker, same Joker, hand.
I was like, what are you talking about, Alonzo? There's three. I know who all three of them are. But and that's the other side of this, in as much as the origin story here is not Batman, like, ooh, I'm going to find our R&D group and have them make me a Batmobile and stuff. Like, it's none of those things that's underway. His entire growth is like developing an ethos as a hero. But you do get a solid origin story to me of Riddler, of your small sort of Joker tease, of the Catwoman. Like, I still got a sense of, you know, you do find out the origin of Riddler in this, right? Like, oh, here's where that kid started. This is where he got twisted. He is not wrong in following the seeds of corruption. Like, and so, and also, like, we mentioned the less fuckable Colin Farrell in this, but like, even that, it's the Penguin Oz Cobblepot was a different variation that I've seen before. Like, to me, I was like, oh, well, he's sort of middle management here. And now I'm like, oh, I'm assuming that guy's going to move up and just get shittier. And that's kind of fun.
They might be able to save some money if they bring the Penguin back for what I hope they call That Batman. That's my pitch. I want them to be called That Batman. It just hired De Niro, right? De Niro needs some work, and all he's doing is De Niro. So let's just eliminate the middleman.
He is doing a very solid De Niro.
I think ultimately what this movie is doing is, if you go back to the roots of like the original Batman story, the original origin, which is, you know, criminals are a cowardly, superstitious lot, I shall become a bat. And this movie is him realizing, oh, there are limitations to that idea, and maybe I should become something else if I really just want to like make Gotham City a better place and not merely just scare the shit out of miscreants in a super fascist style.
Yeah. If they had any guts, if they had any balls, if they were not cowards, they would have Batman to have him transforming into the satin cape Adam West Batman, like the duly deputized officer of the law.
The rainbow Batman.
The rainbow Batman, like careful chum, pedestrian safety Batman. That's what they should do.
Bam! Pow!
Bam, yeah. Pow, zap. Let's get some bam, pow, zap.
Vote.
Yes, yes. We're going to go to our vote. And as we do, there's three levels here. Screen it, stream it, or skip it. Screen it being the best, stream it being the middle ground, and skip it being self-explanatory. So who wants to kick this thing off?
I'm both literally and figuratively a stream it, because I screened it in IMAX and it was like my first time back in a movie theater in months, and it was kind of overwhelming. So I personally endorse watching this at home. I think it's more digestible that way. It is a long ass movie. And it's also like, you know, I'd say it falls firmly in the upper middle for me of like Batman movies ever. It didn't completely rocked my world. I admire a lot of it more than I like was into it. But you know, it's worth looking at, and I think they're definitely trying to do something new and different.
I am I'm a screen it in terms of value and merit and how much I enjoyed it, but I am with Alonzo. I streamed it at home, and the benefit of that, because you guys know I drink a hell of a lot of water, I had to pee like four times during this movie, both reflection of how much water I consumed and the length of the movie, and I was very glad not to miss any of it, because I feel in a theater large portions of this would have flown by me in my escapes to the restroom. Yes. I really enjoyed it.
I'm definitely screaming in terms of quality, but stream it in terms of practicality, because I'm 54 hell damn ass years old. I put the subtitles on, and because this is one of those movies that's like, and then like I need the subtitles. I need the subtitles. Even when it says something like ominous music starts, I'm like, okay, fine. I get it. I'm old. This is my new normal.
I'm going to go with screen it. Take the overwhelming energy. I do think Alonzo is right, though. You're going to love streaming it at the 2.5 hour mark. when you can, like, you know, take your break and drink and refresher. But when you're ready to tough it out, when you're ready to sit there and make it happen, go ahead and go and screen it.
Look, it's not like it's Drive My Car or something. This is one where you really do feel the length, I think. But that's just me.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll be right back. But first, let's tell you a little something about Maximum Fun Drive.
Hey, everybody. We have been talking a lot about Max Fun Drive and why it is a great idea to support our show, Maximum Film, as well as the other shows on this network that bring you great information and entertainment week in and week out. But in addition to the satisfaction of knowing you're part of something awesome and making us all happy and love you from afar, there are also actual tangible perks.
That's right. Not just the intangible glow of knowing that you're a Max Fun supporter and all the great stuff that comes with that, but hey, starting at $5 a month, you get access to an amazing bonus feed, extra special, unique, individualized, exclusive content from all the shows on the network. We think you're going to love the one that Max Film that we recorded. We basically took a bunch of those meme questions from film Twitter where people ask about, like, what's the first movie that terrified you? What are four films that you love more than anybody else? We put together a whole list of them and we answered them ourselves because we knew you'd want to know. And how do you get access to that bonus feed? Becoming a newer upgrading Max Fun donor.
Ooh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And if you increase your subscription to $10 in the month or bump up to the next level, you get patches. See, for our patch, we wanted to get something that really spoke to the soul of the show. So why not something that I have just forced onto the show by repeating over and over and over, like the phrase in the booth? And we put a lot of thought into the design. We spoke with the designers because we wanted some nice Wes Anderson flair to it. So
there were drafts.
Yes. So please notice the taste, enjoy it, employ it.
enjoy it and employ it and put it on your bag or your denim jacket. Who knows? You know, you do what you want.
Recognize each other in public.
Wear with pride. Spread the gospel of us. And that's the $10 a month. And with that, you also get the bonus content from the $5. You get everything.
Yeah.
Accumulates.
There are, of course, higher levels if you want to show more support and get more stuff. And you can find all that on the website.
So if you are able to support us and have a few extra ducats you'd love to send our way in support of our show, you can do so at MaximumFun.org/join, and we would appreciate it greatly. Thanks so much.
Let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm Ify Wadiway. With me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Glenn Weldon,
Drea Clark.
And the Batman is the latest in a long line of on-screen Batman, but it also features a brand new entry in a storied movie tradition. Made up drugs. The hot new drug in question is called Drops, and Gothamites are just wild for the stuff. So I thought that we'd share some other memorable made up drugs from cinema history. So who wants to start with some of their favorite fake drugs?
I know one of my very favorites. Oh, did you want to go first?
No, please.
Okay. Because I honestly had to look up. It was the first thing that came to mind when I saw this question. And terrific question, producer mm-hmm. Marissa. Mm-hmm. But I had to look up to make sure it was a drug because I was like, man, is that a thing kids can do? But basically, from Mad Max Fury Road, when the war boys are like essentially going to sacrifice themselves in some idiotic act of violence to like whatever, they take this spray. It's called Night Fume is the name of it, but it's basically like a chrome spray, and they spray it and huff the fumes and get like essentially go get high and psychotic in their last moments on this earth and are like to Valhalla, and it's a whole thing. And it's my favorite movie drug because it is so visceral, and it's also visual, like in not just that you get to see how they look high, but the idea of, oh yeah, I know when they're on it because their freaking face goes silver. Like it's not, oh, can you tell I've been doing Night Fume? There's no like discreet, like, oh, I'm just a teacher with a Night Fume problem.
I was vaping. You wouldn't notice.
Exactly.
Mine is not actually a substance, but I think it definitely counts as a drug. And that would be the wiry metal yarmulke things from uh-huh. Strange Days, uh-huh. The Catherine Bigelow movie,
yeah.
Where you basically jack into other people's memories and, like, you know, get to experience these wild things that other people have and get the sort of whatever adrenaline rush and stuff that comes with it. That just seems to me like it's like it was this warning about VR.
Right?
that it's addictive and dangerous, kids, and no good can come of it.
Yep. First of all, about drops. This is where you kind of actually put drops into your eyes while you're at a club. Like, conjunctivitis must be rampant. Oof. In Gotham City. It's like, yeah. That is just unsafe. But for me, this was a very easy question. It's a great question. In the 1984 film Supergirl, the movie, starring Helen Slater, long before she gleamed her first cube, long before she became the legend that is Billie Jean, she was Supergirl. She fought the sorceress Selina, played by, of course, who else? Faye Dunaway and her sidekick, Brenda Vaccaro. But her mentor was this guy, Zaltar, played by a very late career, I require a wet bar in my trailer, Peter O'Toole. And she gets sent to the Phantom Zone. And the Phantom Zone is where Zaltar is. He's hanging out because he exiled himself there. He's living in this kind of boutique hotel yurt that has been, from the looks of it, it's been powered sprayed with human feces. But, like, he is stumbling around. And he's wearing this, and please, listeners, please Google this. He is wearing this very 80s Chess King sweater tunic thing. Google Peter O'Toole, Supergirl. And he's carrying this perfume bottle atomizer thing, and he keeps squirting himself in the mouth. And then he goes over to her, and he goes, squirt. And she says no. And then he goes, squirt, and then he spritzes himself in the mouth. I don't know what squirt is, but it's getting him very, very high. It could be the citrus beverage.
It is a lemon-lime treat.
Could be the lemon-lime treat.
Yes, it's a grapefruit soda.
Look, I know whatever it is. I know whatever it is, it isn't
pee. Oh, my God. I'll say that minus the feces spray, you really had Iffy, like, want it. He's like, what? A bougie yurt?
Yeah, I love a yurt.
Is this a veil?
Love to rent a yurt.
This one.
Love romantic excursions to a yurt. You're naked most of the time. You're having lots of sex, and it's very aerated, so it doesn't, you know.
Also surf fun to the say. Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
Fun to say yurt.
But speaking of feces, mine is going to be, mine is going to come from the faculty, if we all remember, scat. My favorite thing about it was that it not only was it a fake drug, it was like a fake homemade drug that was like the quote I have here is mostly caffeine and some other household shit. Like, and you know, I grew up in the 90s and I want to be like, this is ridiculous, but yeah, these kids I grew up around definitely
all had drank.
Well, they were just taught. They were figuring out what could make you high. You know, whippets kind of really blew up for us. I was like, yeah, y'all just y'all. It's almost like you know what's going to happen when we grow up. It's almost like you like they're pre gaming for the Occupy Wall Street. They just didn't know it yet.
Can I give an honorable mention to what I had first thought of and then was like, oh, I think that's a real drug. So it doesn't fit at all. But because I am a Puritan who lives in a bunker, I first thought, I was like, ooh, fun, like a movie fake thing. What about that thing that in Blue Velvet is not...
Oh, nitrous.
It's nitrous.
Nitrous that he keeps like inhaling, and then I'm like, oh, idiot.
Oh, no,
that's a very real drug. It is a very real drug, but it doesn't change his voice the way the real nitrous does.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird.
My honorable mention would be on the show Riverdale. There's a designer drug going around called Jingle Jangle, which is funny because the Archies had a hit song called Jingle Jangle back in the day. And I love how they're wedging old Archie lore into this show in other ways. So.
Look at you watching what the kids watch. Keeping young.
One and a half seasons and I was done.
I couldn't.
All right.
Yeah. I think that's it for drugs. That's it.
Drugs out.
Just say no, you kids.
Yeah.
Just say no.
Just so you know, this segment was sponsored by Dare. So make sure you sign your permission slip and let your teachers know that you did listen to this segment of the podcast. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, Drea, why don't you kick us off?
All right, so my film is not related to Batman at all, but I'm going to pretend the connection is because Robert Pattinson is an English actor, and this is an English film, and it's an indie. It played Tribeca last year called All My Friends Hate Me. It's currently available to rent. It is, I'm pretty sure it's a directorial debut, but if you are ever anyone that looks at the idea of like, oh yeah, me and my friends from college, now that we're adults, are going to go away from the weekend, but I have like social anxiety and all these, and those sound like a horror movie to you, then this is the one. It's all like tension of someone who's anxious and questioning his friends and been away, and then keeps thinking like they're trying to like shove him out of the group, and then maybe he is actually life is being threatened. And so it's kind of satirical, dark, super funny. I just found it a really fun little watch. All My Friends Hate Me.
I have one, but I want to let Glenn go first in case I might have stolen his.
I don't think you did. My pick is Careful, which is a 1992 film directed by Guy Madden. It is shot on 16mm film. It is his first film in color, but he's Canadian, so I guess I have to say color. it's streaming on Canopy and Kino. It goes off and on Amazon and Criterion in really annoying ways because I can never find it. The film is hard to describe, but cover me, I'm going in. It's a parody of German mountaineering films of the 1930s because somebody had to, right? It's very precise. It's a very precise parody. And I guess it helps listeners to know that the Germans made lots and lots of films about how we should get our youth out into nature and climbing mountains for their health and well-being, because there is magic hidden in the mountains because of all German folktales and Wagner and yada, yada, yada. It's like, it was very nationalistic and reactionary. Go figure. And Leni Riefenstahl's The Blue Light, starring Marlene Dietrich, is probably the best known. Madden takes everything about what makes those films so distinctive looking and in tone and kind of a bit silly. Like, it was 1930s. Like, it was still holdover from silent movie acting. So there was, the acting was very arch, very stiff. The dialogue was way heightened. And everything was very literally theatrical because of those films. Because the mountains, of course, nobody shot on location. The mountains were fake. And the backgrounds were backdrops. He doubles down and tells these incredibly Freudian stories about lust and sexual repression. So there's this village of Tulsbad, which is in the mountains. And if you speak above a whisper, you will cause an avalanche that will kill everyone. So they take the vocal cords out of their livestock and their pets to keep from them being too loud. There's this one young man who's going to butler school. He's in love with his mother. The young woman who's in love with him is lusted after by her father. There's a mountain wild girl. There are women who work in the mines in their underwear, and they're wearing candelabras on their heads so they can see. There's children locked in attics. There's self-mutilation. There's suicide. There's avalanches, spoiler, because eventually, you know, emotions will out. And there's lines of dialogue that I quote to this day, including, "Lower the sheepskins. There will be dancing. And we can live on berries and grasses. And the small animals we can kill with sharp sticks." I saw this in theaters, and every time I saw it, every time there's a walkout. Every time. And maybe that was because it's a very twisted, dark film. Maybe because it was me guffawing as loudly as I ever have. It is the most I have ever laughed in a movie. It's not for everyone. Nothing that's any damn good is. That is careful. It's a very hard film to find, but if you can, my God, it will reward you.
Glenn, it's been a while since someone had a pitch, had two cases of incest that surprised me. Yep. Good yep. on you.
It's more sublimated incest, but it's there.
Guy Madden.
So Alonzo, was that what you were going to do?
That is not. And now I feel extra stupid for mine. But it is a film that I had a reaction to, and Glenn beat me to talking about it on Twitter, so I defer the point to him. But my pick is Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Oh my God.
Which is, I always like to call it Deadpool for 7-year-olds. Yeah. It is a very funny and self-aware auto-parody of superhero movies featuring the superheroes you know and love from the DC Universe. And in fact, they do such a great job of puncturing the passion play that is Bruce Wayne's parents go to Crime Alley and get murdered, that I agree with Glenn's theory that that's why they didn't do it in the Batman, because right. it was griddled so brilliantly in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. So
it's done. It's over. It's canceled.
Exactly.
Yep. Can't do it again.
And it's the movie that finally allows Nicolas Cage to play Superman, which he's wanted to do his entire life. So, if you skipped it because you didn't know the show or you thought it was just for kids or whatever, give this movie a shot. It's a really smart parody. Some terrific songs.
I
thought they had at least one best song nominee in there that year, and they didn't, and yeah, boo the Academy. But it's streaming on HBO Max. Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Excellent choice.
Nice.
Yeah. Same here. I wanted to do something that kind of related to the film in some way. Alonzo has a great pick. I went a little different, and I followed the trail of Paul Dano, who, if you didn't know, in his child acting years went as Paul Franklin Dano, like the weird three-name actor kids usually do. but yeah, I'm going with There Will Be Blood. Check it out. Hold it down and enjoy yourself. I loved it. It's a PTA flick. You know, that's what the cool kids call Paul Thomas Anderson. It's something that I always enjoyed, and I'm glad I was able to just toss it in the mix today.
And when we text about nitrate films, Iffy is regularly puncturing that with, "I drink your milkshake."
Yeah, I drink your milkshake.
Nitrate, you know, and then he works in nitrate again.
It's one of the main reasons that Drea refuses to go to a bowling alley with me. She just simply doesn't trust me.
Yeah, it exploits the latent how hard it is to like Paul Dano. It kind of exploits that for him.
Yeah, yeah.
He leans in.
Oh yeah, he knows.
Bless him. Bless him.
As we have said several times during the show, this is the Max Fun Drive, and we just want to thank everyone who has supported our show. Thank you. You're keeping the lights on, you're pretty great for that.
Y'all are the best, and we've received such lovely notes over the last couple of years about how, with the pandemic and being stuck at home and, you know, not getting to interact with your real friends, that, you know, parasocial relationships became more and more important, and that this show was really an important part of that. And trust me, same for us, getting together once a week to do this show and seeing each other in the virtual booth. You know, has been a real sort of like sanity keeper for me, and so, you know, it's been as much of a pleasure for us to do this show as I hope it has been for you guys to listen to it. And so, for everybody who's been listening and you know, keeping in touch and giving us questions on the hotline, all that stuff, thank you, you're awesome. And for all of you who have gone the extra step and become Maximum Fun supporters, and specifically supporters of Maximum Film, you know, y'all are just the greatest. Thank you so much. We are doing it for you. We're doing it for everybody who's listening, and we hope that everything that we do is going to make you want to maintain that relationship.
Yeah, and to be candid about it, like, it is a very direct, we get paid to do this show, and the money to make this show happens comes because of that support. So if you are able to, and you're doing that, and you're like, yeah, I'll kick in a little each month, that's where it goes to, and we're so grateful for it, because it is something that really earnestly means a lot to all three of us, and to Marissa, our producer, and to Laura and the whole Max Fun team. And so, yeah, from the bottom of our dorky, sincere hearts, thank you for that.
All right. And that's true. So if you want to become a member, go to MaximumFun.org/join. But now it's time that we give all the thanks to our esteemed guest and Batman scholar, Lynn Weldon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Guys, this was a delight. I'm such a fan of the show. I'm such a fan of Max Fun. You guys are doing a great job. Keep it up.
Thank you, sir.
Yay. Glenn Weldon. What a star.
I know.
A must follow on Twitter. Where can people find you, sir?
GH Weldon, for no discernible reason.
All right. Is there anything you want to plug at all?
Oh, heck. Pop Culture Happy Hour is a show that I'm on NPR. There's a new book out called NPR's Podcast Startup Guide, which is just really basic advice from a lot of NPR podcasters about how to create and grow and then launch. Well, actually, first you should launch it, then you should grow it. Let's go.
That's what the experts say, yes.
Yeah, and also, you know, The Caped Crusade, Batman on the Rise of Nerd Culture. If you want to talk about nerd culture both in its toxic forms and its positive forms, you know, both as fandom that invites people in and encourages people to get excited about a thing the way this show does, then that's in the book. And if you want to talk about and critique fandom that takes a very kind of toxic and entitled approach to subjects like Batman, that's also in the book. Batman and many other parts of fandom have had to deal with both of those things over the years. And the book is an attempt to look at fandom through the lens of Batman. Over the years.
Nice.
Awesome.
What a guy.
Yes. What a guy indeed. Heck. But, you know, there's two other folks who I think are pretty great. That's you, Dre and Alonzo.
Oh,
thank you
golly.
For another wonderful show, and happy Max Fun Drive once again.
And to you.
Your tour.
Oh, thank you.
And also to you.
And also to you there, listener. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.